The gurus of how to are here, Alvin and Lawrence U. Bell, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, NY. I'm not going to give the zip code.
Why
so
not?
It was a pleasure to see you, gentlemen. Because I don't know
it's just 112.
Well, yeah, I know it's 112 something.
112 something?
Yeah.
That's all right. That's close enough.
112 USA?
Yes.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, I'll tell you something. We used to have just 112, and then they added 112 whatever number. Now they add four additional numbers.
It wasn't 112, Alvin. It used to be Brooklyn 07 or Brooklyn 09.
Yeah, or Brooklyn 35 or something.
And remember when the telephone numbers were things like Evergreen 7?
Twining 1.
Twining.
Murray Hill 64. What was that?
No, that was Manhattan.
Well, Pennsylvania
6-5,000.
5,000.
I grew up in Williamsburg, where we had Evergreen Milk and Evergreen, and we had the Evergreen Exchange.
Really? Yes.
And I think we're really being invaded by the numbers. I mean, really, the numbers are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. You have to have memory for all these numbers.
I mean, yeah, well, now I know nobody remembers them anymore. They just simply hit, they go to their cell phone, and they recall all the numbers that are on the list. And
you know, you make an interesting point because
I know three or four numbers by heart now. No, I used to know hundreds.
Exactly. And my friend Liz calls me and she goes, well, you have my number. And I go, but I didn't have my cell phone with me.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you something. Estelle used to remember.
Estelle is your wife and Lawrence's mother.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what they tell me.
And I'll tell you something.
That's their story, and they're sticking to it.
The hospital has evidence.
We know no one ever forges documents.
Whoa.
Nobody's going to want any advice from you guys. When we first started in business, Estelle knew everybody's telephone number by heart before we even had a computer.
Yeah. Now she doesn't.
Now.
You don't need to. You don't do it.
Yes.
Anyway, we take your calls when the U-Bells come here. Our number here is 212-433-9692. We have a little quiz where there's a little prize. What else are we going to do?
Well, actually, on today's, it's very interesting because it's a two-part question, which Alvin's going to read in a second. It's a two-part. So if you know both of them and you're one caller, you will get two books. You can give one away as a wonderful Christmas present. But if one person gets one part right and then another person calls in for the other type, each person will get a book today because we're feeling...
This is a two-parter.
We're in that holiday spirit.
The Yuletide season.
Right.
And the Hanukkah season.
Right.
And Kwanzaa.
And Kwanzaa.
Yeah, so let me give you the word so everybody can have... And they're in bated breath, you know. This word has to do with pumps, you know, pumps, and the concept...
Shoes, are we talking about?
And a concept of physics, all right? What is the name given to the rotating disc or blades or basket, really it's a basket, that can pump, push, or draw fluids or gases? The second part of the question. And what is the concept that makes this device work?
Okay,
so if you got that, we're looking for the name of the rotating disc with blades that's part of a pump.
Or the basket that has the blades.
And then the scientific concept.
That's
exactly.
Right.
Okay, and our number again, 212-433-9692.
Anybody taking bets on this?
Well, I want to give. I'm going to give a slight hint. I feel everyone's is Googling Newton as we speak.
They're eating fig Newtons as we speak. Do you have anything you want to say about what's going on weather-wise and home repair before we start taking calls?
Not really. I think most of these are going to come up, but I mean, we've been, you know, we had a couple of days of cold weather and people started experiencing some heat-related problems. But I think the big thing for people to remember is for those people who have hot water systems, it's a good time to bleed out your radiators to make sure all the air is out. If the top of the radiators aren't getting warm, means they're airbound. If you have a steam system, it's a good time to make sure that the water's at the right level and that all the valves are all the way open on the input side and that the bleeder valves are working properly. And if you have a forced air system, check that filter if it hasn't been on yet because it probably is dirty from the summer or from the air conditioning. It's time to clean that.
And also, if you have furniture that is next to radiators or air ventilators, move that furniture away because all that furniture just stifles that unit from putting heat where it's least expensive for you.
Right. So it's very important.
Okay. Now let's take some calls. Bob from Queens. Hi, you're on the air.
Good. Thanks very much for taking my call. My daughter, as part of her renovation, had new custom kitchen cabinets installed in the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a terrible, terrible odor when she opens the cabinets, and she's afraid to put any food in it. So she has these beautiful cabinets, which are totally useless.
They're probably outgassing.
Probably, yes. Many of these units are made with all kinds of resins and glues and stuff like that, especially if it's urea formaldehyde glue. Could take a little while until it ventilates. My best bet is that you should leave all the cabinet doors open for a considerable length of time.
Can she put air fresheners in there?
Let me tell you about
those air fresheners, by the way. The air fresheners are just...
Let me tell you something, Sonny.
All they are is a desensitizer for your nostrils, and they really disguise the problems that are taking place. Your nose is a very important piece of machinery to your body that really tells you if something it doesn't smell right, there's something wrong with it.
And in this case, you're talking about urea.
Urea,
which is wasn't that the first molecule ever synthesized?
That's true. And but the point is that...
Who did you interview on that one?
No, I remember that my college teacher, he had this joke. He said, urea, I have found it.
Urea.
And the other part is formaldehyde.
And we didn't laugh.
And that's telling us that Lenny went to school.
I know.
Yeah,
and the other part of that is the formaldehyde.
I was a terrible student.
Which we all know. Stay focused here.
That's
Dad.
All I remember, that urea joke.
Really. But anyway, getting back to this gentleman, I think the solution for this problem is you want these cabinets to outgas quicker than they are normally. And I think lowering the temperature in the kitchen for a period of time, let's say everyone goes out for the day, open up the windows or at least keep the place ventilated, bring the temperature down in the building, maybe get that kitchen to about 50, 55 degrees, and a lot of those odors are in moisture particles and it will be absorbed into the atmosphere because of the lower relative humidity of the kitchen.
Yes, if you lower the relative humidity, the evaporational rate is much more accelerated.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you. We'll try that.
And then when she puts up the heat, when she comes back in, is that going to change the situation again?
They'll be gone by then. If you bring up the heat also, what will happen is if you dehumidify by ventilating the area and then you put heat into a room, what you're doing is you're also, the heat will reduce the relative humidity also, and that will also accelerate.
Make it better.
You make it better. That transition from cold to hot right away will cause the evaporational rate to be increased.
Ben from Staten Island. Hi, you're on the Leonard Lopez Show.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, how are you guys?
What's up?
I have a room that is in the basement. The whole floor of the basement, it has ceramic tile, but evidently the guy who was in there before had a kennel of cats in this 9x15 room, and it smells something awful. It's clean. You can't see that there's any urine, but obviously it just has this terrible cat odor. Wonder what you can do about it.
Okay. What have you tried to use for cleaning the area up?
Well, I've used cleaning solutions.
Have you tried just a mild solution of soap, water, and bleach? Because most of the odor that cats create is from urine, which has a high quantity of ammonia. Well,
we can't escape this urea problem.
But I'm saying is that the ammonia, the bleach in the solution will neutralize the ammonia, which will get rid of a lot of the odor. Alvin?
Also, another thing you can do is you can get some boric acid. It's very, very good for that thing because sodium bicarbonate. These kind of things absorb that kind of moisture very rapidly. All that is potash, and they use that for absorbing odors and everything like that. And you could put, if you buy this sodium bicarbonate and put it into like an old sock and put it in different places, that will absorb a lot of the urine odors and also act as a dehumidifier. It does a lot of things, the sodium bicarbonate. And it also keeps away cockroaches.
But I'm also thinking that a lot of the problem that he's having is that the urine has probably soaked its way into the grout
it's
of the
very
tile.
Very difficult to get
into
rid
the
of.
Grout of the tile. So what we have to do is get into the grout of the tile to neutralize it. And I think the bleach. But, be careful with the bleach. Use gloves. Don't use a lot of it because bleach is probably one of the most toxic things that we have normally in our homes.
You don't want it to get into your lungs.
No. You don't. You want to be very careful and ventilate the area very well.
This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate with the gurus of how-to, Alvin and Lawrence U. Bell. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Also taking your comments on our comment line. And maybe I'll read a couple of these and we can rush through them.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
This person, William, says, does it pay to have the thermostat lower the temperature when nobody's home or when you're sleeping?
Absolutely. I'll tell you something. The heating system is nothing more or less like a light switch. If you turn off the light, you're not using any energy. And if you're going to be out of the house for 8 or 9 hours, why have the heat way up high? However, you're going to have to get used to figuring out how long it takes you to heat your house up from a lower temperature. Each house is going to be different depending upon the heat loss of that particular building. One of the best devices that you can buy is one of these new types of electronic thermometers that thermostats, which have settings that you could set the unit to tell the unit when you're going to get back to the house, and you could turn up the heat like an hour before you get home, so that when you get into your home, it's nice and comfortable.
Actually, at the office where in our office over the weekend, we dropped the temperature down to 50 degrees. Then what we on Monday, when I know the office is going to be very cold because it's been off for 2 days, I have it come up maybe an hour and a half before anyone arrives at the office. They walk in the front door, and now it's 72 or 68, whatever we set it at. And it's like that until the next evening when it goes back down to 50 degrees again, and we have it go up and down. And the same thing, we do the opposite with air conditioning.
How much do those timers cost?
They're about
$100 to $200.
Yeah, but you just think of all the money you save.
Exactly.
Electricity and heat.
And they make it very easy because they don't use it. What they do now, they have different areas of the day into sleep, wake, leave, return. And it goes through that four-time cycle, and it's very easy to install and very easy to set up.
Yes, but you got to go to school to learn how to read the instructions.
That's not true. It's actually very easy because I figured it out.
Yes.
Okay?
If he figured it out, anybody can figure it out. But the point is, if you remember this concept, for every degree you lower the temperature, you save 2 to 3% of your energy bill. That is a lot
for
of
that, wow. For that period of time.
That's really terrific. And in light of that, Accurate Building Inspector has a newsletter that goes out called the Gotham City Inspector. And this issue was dedicated to saving energy. And if anybody wants a copy of that issue, they can just go to our website, www.accuratebuilding.com. And it has, what is your EQ, your energy quotient? And it gives you a test to see how much energy you can save or how much energy you are saving. And that is quite significant, especially everybody wants to be in this green world that we're hopefully get back. So that's what we're in.
I'm so grateful that it's an EQ because I thought it was IQ and I was failing it.
Well, not only that, but that test takes about 4 hours. This one will only take you maybe about 20 or 30 minutes.
Let's go to Ted.
And it pays off.
Ted from Queens. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Ted.
Hi there. I have a single brick on my bathroom wall. It's a brick wall, and there's a single brick there that is like disintegrating into a powder. And it's only that one brick.
Okay, and
all the other bricks are fine.
All the other,
everything.
Probably a one bad brick. Probably went, it was just a one.
There's always one bad brick in every barrel.
It spoils the whole bunch.
Well, when you have a single bad brick, if it's not too badly eroded away, and that's probably because that particular brick in the kiln was maybe at the edge of the kiln where it didn't get fully fired up, and so that you didn't have good crystallization of the clay coming together. However, what you can do is, if you can saturate that particular brick with some sort of adhesive, such as epoxy, just take epoxy glue and just scrape it right over the face of it, brush it on, like almost like a paintbrush, and that'll be absorbed into the material, and it'll probably solidify the face of that particular brick.
Okay.
All right.
So give that a shot.
Yeah, the clear epoxy is probably the best.
And the only other way would be to take this whole thing out and put another brick.
That's too costly, and you'll be able to screw it all up. But you take this clear epoxy, and then after it solidifies, it'll have a shiny surface to it. All you do is take a little sandpaper over it and to dull it up again so it looks like the rest of the bricks.
But there is one other thing that he can do. The other thing is that if it keeps deteriorating even after this, let's say it's so deteriorated that what we just painted on falls off also.
That could happen.
With nothing behind it, what you can do is keep scraping the brick down around, and you can actually buy brick face, which is only a quarter inch or a half inch wide, and then you could try to attach that and kind of glue that into place with epoxy after you've scraped out all the old bad brick.
That's a good idea. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Let's take some callers who are hoping to answer your quiz, which is a two-parter about the rotating disc that's in a pump, and also the concept that makes the pump work. And our first person trying to answer the question is Mike from Hohokus.
Mike from Hohokus. That's up on Route 17 over there.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And what do you think the disc is?
The disc is an Archimedes screw.
No. Archimedean screw.
Actually, that was last year's question. If I remember correctly.
Archimedean screw was a leverage position that the screw is able to raise water from one level to another, and also it is used in a special kind of screwdriver device, and it's also used in a meat grinder. That's Archimedean screw. In order to grind meat, you put it into a screw, and it squeezes it through the gratings. This is a totally different concept in engineering and in physics.
And so, it doesn't even have the name of a famous Greek physicist.
Archimedes.
Yeah, no, this one.
Yeah. Ed from Brooklyn, what do you think it is?
Hi.
Yes.
Impeller.
Now you're going to go for double?
Why not?
Yeah. What do you think it is?
A vacuum.
No. But hold, this guy got part one. Yeah.
You got part one, and the impeller, that's an important part of a pump or a fan or what they sometimes call a squirrel cage fan that blows air through air conditioning units and everything like that. The whole device is using, that whole device is called an impeller, and it's an ingenious device Isaac Newton figured out all the mathematics.
But don't give it away because we still have another part to be answered.
Yes, I won't give it away, but
okay
so
less is more.
I put him on hold, and our producer now will...
I get excited about these things.
Less is more.
Our producer will take Ed's name and address and everything, and we'll be sending him that book. And JC, is it, from NIAC?
Yeah, that's me.
Hi, JC.
You knew that it was an impeller, but I'm sorry, that part was taken. What concept do you think it is?
It's centrifugal force.
Now, I have to be honest with everybody here. You thought it was going to take forever for people to get this, didn't you?
Yes.
Okay.
That's why I said maybe we should take bets on this.
Well, wonderful.
How did you know both of those things, Ed? JC?
I'm a mechanical effects supervisor for film and television. I do a lot of this.
Cool. Okay.
So you have an inside knowledge.
Well,
I use a lot of pumps.
Okay. Why don't you hold on and they'll take down your information? Okay.
And the book will be out in the mail tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
And thank you for calling. And we will continue taking calls after we take a little break here. Our number is 212-433-9692. My guests are the gurus of How To, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell. Well, we haven't been gone that long, just a few moments, but we are back with the gurus of How To, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, and we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Also taking your questions on our comment line at WNYC.org, the show page. I'm going to read one of those before we go to some of the callers. John from Fanwood, New Jersey. He said, I called a couple of months ago about a leak from the toilet tank to the bowl. I replaced the flapper with a valve that looks like a cut-off wine bottle, but it still leaked. You suggested fishing weights, but that didn't work. I fixed the leak by putting petroleum jelly on the rim of the valve. Was that clever?
Okay, that is good, but unfortunately, it is possible that the petroleum jelly will deteriorate the black rubber quicker than normal because oil and rubber really doesn't mix that well.
Yeah,
because
well,
it starts the oil, because I find that even in my go-kart racing, which I do, is that when you seat the tires with WD-40, which is a petroleum byproduct, if you have the tires on the wheels for too long, the seals deteriorate. So that seal, which is going to be there a lot longer than I use my tires, is probably going to start to deteriorate. It's probably the problem is probably the where the seal is.
Yes.
It probably has some scratches on it.
Yeah.
So is there something else you can put on that doesn't have petroleum?
Yes.
So
you can use what they call...
Hold on.
Because oil and
water
don't
mix. It can't be water-based because it'll deteriorate.
But you can use water pump grease. Which is not a petroleum base.
It's a lithium.
It's lithium.
Lithium, that might work better. But also what he's saying, finish your thought about the seal, what he could do.
Well, you could do, if there's the slightest scratch, what you really have to take out this bottom seal, which is where it connects to the pipe. There's no way of replacing that unless you take apart the whole device and put a new one. I think there are some companies that make what they call is an insert fitting that you put it in with some... with silicone glue right into it, and this holds it in place for a new seal. And sometimes they have a kit that goes with the plunger that goes down on top of it. But it has to be a match set.
But I'm thinking also where the flapper falls into the seal. What he might want to try doing is taking some steel wool or very fine sandpaper, wet and dry sandpaper, since it's going to be underwater, and rub it around in a circle to try. Maybe there's some burrs. Maybe there's a piece of dirt that's just sitting there, which is holding it up, which is letting the water leak.
Very,
through.
Very, very fine.
Very fine.
Wet and dry sandpaper, and clean out that seat on the bottom, and you could get lucky.
I just want to say one observational funny thing. Even though we're talking the radio, we still talk with our hands.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you're not the only guest who do that. Some people make faces. And, you know, I think, well, do they really think the listeners know that they're shrugging their shoulders or making
Do you ever do an interview and you ask a question and they just nod their head and says, no, we
I do. I say, and you know
here.
What I say? I say, you're nodding your head.
You're nodding your head in the affirmative.
But actually, we're putting on a show for Lenny. You know, that's what it is, you know.
I know, if we don't entertain him, we're out of here in a minute.
We're in trouble. Sam from New Jersey.
Yes, Sam.
Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, what's up?
It's a two-part question. The first is, have you heard of a spray-on insulation called Isonene?
Have you?
No.
Neither have I.
Isonene?
Isonene?
Yeah.
Who's the manufacturer?
Who's the manufacturer? What is it made out of?
Well, I don't know. It's got a website, icynene.com, and it says it's inert and, you know, rodents and varmints don't like it, and it's really good.
But how do you know that it's inert?
Well, that's what their brochure.
He's quoting the company line. But let me just ask you a question. Can you do me a favor and send me a email to larry@ubell.com with the web address and put on it the name Isonene Insulation, and I'll look it over and I'll get back to you.
Yeah. Well,
what's part two?
My question is, you know, I have a single family house,
mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering about insulating the attic. Mm-hmm. I mean, the attic floor is insulated. That's all fine. But is it all right to put insulation on the underside of the roof deck, you know, where the nails are coming through?
No, it's not all right. In fact, what it'll cause is it'll cause condensation between the joists and the rafters and the roof sheathing and the insulation. And this thing will cause rotting action. It also acts as an attractant for vermin to harbor in that area. You got to leave the rafters and the underside sheathing ventilated at all times. Besides, putting insulation between the rafters is like taking the blanket off of your bed and nailing it to the ceiling. It doesn't insulate the building. The insulation should be on the floor of the attic, not on the ceiling of the attic.
But let me explain what he means by that. The area of the attic between the floor where the insulation is and the roof is a non-heated space. So you're basically insulating an area that's not heated anyway. And that area, if your attic and building is built properly, there's ventilation. So insulating that area, cold air is coming in there anyway, which it's supposed to do. If you want to put more insulation, you've got to build it more up from the floor. floor.
Absolutely.
And if you only have 6 inches, 12 inches would be better. If you don't think 12 inches is enough, which it should be, then put in more. But 12 inches in this part of the world should be more than adequate.
And also you should lay any insulation on the floor should be laid perpendicular to the floor joists or to the original insulation that was placed into the attic floor area.
Okay?
Thank you so much for calling us. Philip from East Orange, you're on.
How you doing? I have an 1886 Victorian, and the basement floor in warmer weather gets water spots all over it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to put something over it, like some kind of tile. But how do I take care of that first?
That's a difficult thing because, first of all, the concrete or the floor that you have on the...
Well, can I just ask one question before you go on?
Yes.
How old is the floor that's down there?
I think it's the original floor to the house.
It can't be original because they weren't pouring concrete in homes back in 1880, whatever. That probably didn't get put in until probably the 20s and 30s when there was a big urgence of concrete. The Portland Cement Manufacturers Association made a big push. They would go to towns and they would pave a piece of road that was like 100 or 200 feet long, and everyone would take their car and buggies and roll across it. Wow, this is good stuff. Let's pave the whole city. But anyway, probably didn't go in. So probably when they put that in, the technology wasn't as good, and the people putting it in probably didn't know the technology, so there probably isn't gravel underneath that concrete.
Well, it's not only gravel, but there is no visqueen, no membrane at all, and that's causing the moisture to come up from
right.
the floor, because concrete is not waterproof. Concrete has a very high degree of capillary action, and any moisture that's in the substrata will be sucked up into the concrete, and that's what those stains are that you are that you've seen.
Okay. Now, what if he wanted to put the tile down on top of it? Would that cause a problem, or would the tile adhere properly?
It depends upon the hydrostatic pressure of mm-hmm. the subfloor. And what happened is, which our experience is, that if you put down tile on a floor that is not membrane waterproof from the underside, eventually water will creep in, and it'll break the bond of the tile to the concrete floor
mm-hmm.
in due course.
So
that's what you see. Well, sometimes you see the resilient floor tiles that are always popping up all
right,
over the place.
Because of the hydrostatic pressure.
Exactly.
So one of the things you might have to do is re-pour this concrete floor, which is very costly. One thing I just want to say in response to waterproof concrete, the normal concrete we use in our homes and that's used for foundations is normally 2,500 PSI concrete, which is not waterproof by any stretch of the imagination. Once they get concrete to about 5,000, 6,000 PSI, it becomes waterproof.
It becomes somewhat waterproof.
Because it's more dense.
Yeah, it's more dense. But in order to make concrete really waterproof, they have to put in iron filings into it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also
which is what they do in buildings.
Into building or something like that. Or using gunite, mm-hmm. which they use on swimming pools. But the best solution when they pour concrete is put in, especially in a cellar or basement area, is put a like 6 mil visqueen on the floor and on the dirt floor, and then pour the concrete right into it, like, and that acts as a membrane.
This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lope talking with the gurus of how to, and we've had a number of concerned calls. People who heard you say, and I know you didn't, but this is what they heard. They heard you say that you should mix bleach and also ammonia.
No, okay. Let me clarify. You're right. Never do that. You can kill yourself.
Right. That creates a gas, a poison gas.
Deadly, 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 deadly. No, what I said was the bleach will neutralize the ammonia that's in the cat urine, which is not pure ammonia, and it's a very low level. And I know that doesn't kill you because every time I clean out my kitty litter box with some ammonia and water, it doesn't burst into flames and it doesn't outgas anything that's horrible. I mean, we're talking about very low levels, but that's what makes the horrible odor.
But if they are going to mix the bleach with anything, they should mix it with dish detergent or something.
Just liquid detergent.
It's amazing. You know, that is so amazing because you were here, you listened to the conversation and what I said.
No, I know. You said there was ammonia in the cat
urine.
And you should use bleach to get rid of it, and they heard you mix bleach and ammonia.
Amazing.
But, you know, it's important that people not get the wrong idea,
right,
because somebody out there might very well hear
Don't do it. It will actually, our cleaning woman many, many, many years ago, and we didn't know, and remember?
She passed out.
She passed out, and we had to get her to the hospital. It was horrible.
Wow. Okay, let's go to Rob. I'm sorry, from the Bronx. Hi, Rob.
The Bronx.
You're the only other person except for my father that says Bronx.
The Bronx.
But I'm joking, and he's serious.
I know.
Sitting in the Bronx, but my question pertains to my four-family apartment building in Harrison.
Okay.
Basically, my father built the building, and he on bad advice from a contractor, he took a shortcut, and he used steel frame construction, but the flooring, instead of using concrete floors, those pans that you weld in, he took a shortcut and he put two layers of half-inch plywood.
I knew you were going to plywood. I just had had a feeling in my bones that you were going to plywood.
Yes. And now we have a rigidity issue in the floor and an impact noise issue. My grandmother has
Hang on. What's your name, Rob?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Rob, hang on. His father built the building. Yeah. They cheaped out, and instead of putting panning in to pour the concrete floors, did plywood.
And the plywood is now rotting away and deteriorating.
No, it's not rotting. It's in pretty good shape.
But it's noisy.
Some tenants had to move out because they had children, and the children drove my grandmother below crazy with the impact noise.
Well, the only thing
there's also a lot of flex to the floor. Now we have the carpet up. The tenants are out, and my father wants to install a wood floor, but we have to attenuate the impact noise. It's too late to put concrete because the floors and partitions are all up.
All right, but there are ways, depending upon how the framing is, there are techniques that can stiffen up a floor to make it really solid. But I can't. That's a difficult thing to do it over the radio or a telephone diagnosis. You really need some technician to come to the house and figure out what the deflection is and give you the right method of correcting that deflection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I can't give it. Is too. It really requires a diagram and a technique that is employed a lot. If you have a copy of Architectural Graphic Standards by Ramsey and Sleeper, which is in the library, there are some issues that do have volumes that do have a technique that may adjust your problem.
Is there any product that you guys are aware of that reduces impact noise that you could just...
Well, I got to see why the impact noise is occurring. It's very hard for us to figure out because impact noise could come from a whole host of different issues, and I got to take a look at it. I can't... I would avoid telling you what to do because I probably will wind up being wrong.
Let's take another call. This is from Jane from Ramsey, New Jersey.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, what's your problem?
Well, I just have a question regarding turning the heat up and down as you are in the house and out of the house. My plumber and utility company both said that you should have that differential be only 4 degrees. Otherwise, you're having your system work too hard and... that you don't really save any money.
They don't know what they're talking about. They don't know what they're talking about.
They really don't.
Well, I'll tell you something. And 4 degrees
hold on. Let me just answer the question that the system's working too hard.
It's yours.
Okay. That is completely absurd because these systems are designed for a design temperature. Where do you live?
New Jersey.
What part? What town?
Ramsey.
Ramsey.
Okay. Probably the design temperature of Ramsey is probably either 0 or 5 degrees below zero. That means that when it gets to that temperature, your heating system is on 24/7. It's constantly on. That's the design temperature. Okay. So what makes it on more than less or more work than having it just go from, let's say, 62 or 63 degrees to 72 degrees? That makes no sense. It makes absolutely no sense.
Okay. The whole name of the game in heating a building or anything like that, it is not how hard something works. It's the duration in which it works.
Because it doesn't work any harder. It's not like a car pulling a trailer up a hill.
No, it works the same speed because it's the same motor. It's the same everything. The point is that if you turn it off, if you give it enough time, it'll heat up the house. The idea is you should never, ever bring the temperature down below the freezing point because you don't want to have a building that's frozen and breaks pipes. However, most thermostats are designed never to permit you to go below 50 and 40 degrees. So even if you push it down to the lowest point, there's always enough heat in that building to keep the building from freezing over.
Okay.
Now, Larry, I handed you a whole bunch of listener comments,
yes.
but we don't have time to handle them. They do have email addresses.
And I will try to get to them.
And for other people who were not able to get on the air?
You can email me at larry@ubell.com. Do not email here because then they just end up forwarding it to me anyway.
I do.
You do. And then what happens is I don't change the forwarding address and I end up calling.
Yeah, he
sending
gives me the answers to all of
these. I give all
the
answers to Lenny and he goes, well, and I hit myself in the head and I say I could have had a V8. But anyway, send it to larry@ubell.com.
And meanwhile, you will be back on January 9th. You know, that's going to be really in the middle of a major cold snap, but.
How do you
know
that?
We'll be able to, I'm predicting it. I'm, okay. I'm the Farmer's Almanac.
Wow.
And what are you going to do at that time?
We're going to go show all of America how to go forth and fix, save energy, money, and
do it safely.
Thank you so much, Alan, Larry.
And have a happy holidays.
On tomorrow's show, Lucy Wainwright Roach and her father, Loudon Wainwright, perform live in our studios. Also, John Richardson on how Pablo Picasso found his style. Then, how freeform radio station WFMU manages to survive in today's competitive media climate. And on Underreported, we revisit Afghanistan, a country that still may not be getting enough media attention, given that what happens there is such huge strategic importance. The Leonard LoPage Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Scott Goldberg, and Sarah English. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from Stephen Valentino, Rory Bernstein, and Samantha Morgenstern. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard LoPage, your host. We'll see you tomorrow.